Welcome to episode 66 of the Mountain Land Running Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Heiderstreich from the University of Wisconsin. And unfortunately, starting off the new year without my co-host, Jeremy Stoker. We've got some scheduling issues that always creep in every so often. And unfortunately, weren't able to make this one work. So we wish Jeremy the best. And we look forward to chatting with him again on our next podcast. With the new year, again, don't forget to take a peek at the Mountain Land Running Summit webpage at summit.mlrehab.com. Very soon, we'll be posting the programming for this year's summit, which will be September 29th through October 1st at the Sheraton Park City in Park City, Utah. We've had a number of fantastic conferences and events over the past, going on 5 or 6 years now with the summit. And we're looking forward to continuing that trend this year with some fantastic speakers. So again, keep checking back on our webpage for further updates. As always, send questions and feedback to podcast@mlrehab.com. Always enjoy hearing people's comments as well as suggestions for future guests. Today, we're going to talk with Aoife Burke from Dublin City University about foot strike technique and its relationship to running-related injuries. Aoife is an assistant professor in the athletic training program in the School of Health and Human Performance. After completing her athletic training and therapy degree, she worked in a private musculoskeletal clinical practice while also working with some elite teams within Ireland, such as Dublin GAA and some Irish international football teams. Aoife spent some time at the Sports Surgery Clinic in Santra, assisting with research involving chronic athletic groin pain and ACL biomechanics, and is currently pursuing a PhD with a focus on the kinetic and kinematic risk factors associated with running-related injuries. Welcome, Aoife. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Brian, for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to this discussion. Obviously, this is an area that has a lot of awareness with regarding foot strike patterns. It's something that the general public knows a lot about or thinks they know a lot about, right? Whatever they read in various lay literature. So it's always good to revisit this to get an update on where the science stands on the role of foot strike technique and running-related injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I feel like the more I read, the less I know myself. So there's just such a wide breadth of information, both anecdotally and scientifically. And it's just trying to determine and to synthesize that information and see, you know, is it worth changing? Is it not? Does it even relate to injury or not? Or what we're going to do with it?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because you are seeing clinical approaches, I guess, or interventions that are suggested to try to modify foot strike. And if you're going to modify it, that means it must be significant. It must have an influence on either injury cause or injury recovery. So it is absolutely worth revisiting that because, again, I think if we were to sum it up in a nutshell, right, as to what people think about foot strike, it's rear foot bad, forefoot, midfoot good, you know, in kind of in the basic terms. And I think, certainly as we're going to talk today and your work has indicated, it's certainly not that clear. So maybe let's just start out a little bit with what, you know, a bit about your background, you know, where your interest came in this general topic, but also your training and what led you to this line of work for your PhD.
Yeah, so I suppose when I graduated, as you said previously, I was working in a private clinical practice, and you know, anybody could really walk through the door there with any kind of injury, and runners tended to come in very frequently, and they seem to be a defiant group, you know, like they're constantly injured, it seems, and they persist beyond belief and keep training despite the pain and the niggles and everything else that goes with the sport. So I always had an interest in running related injuries. And then, as I said, you know, I try to read about it and try to figure out, you know, what can I do to try and help it? Or are there risk factors that I don't even know yet? And did a bit of reading, and somebody recommended the Born to Run book by Christopher McDougall. So read that and was fascinated by it, you know, where evolution has kind of changed, I suppose, the concept of humans and how we approach activity and survival. And following that, then I was at a conference in Prague where Joseph Hamill gave a keynote talk about foot strike technique and foot strike patterns and running injuries. And at the same time, I was kind of starting a review of literature in the PhD, and I just thought, you know what, this is a good time to start at the foot and work my way up the kinematic chain. So yeah, just delved into it from the start, really, and I didn't know what kind of a can of worms I was opening at the time, but a bit more intimate with it now.
Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah, there is obviously a lot out there, right? You go back into the literature from the, you know, 1950s, 60s, 70s, even on analysis and using some variety of approaches to now, and how we can measure it pretty easily with IMUs out in the field even. And then, of course, as we're going to get into, there's a variety of different ways to characterize foot strike technique. So, you know, in terms of the prior work that you're familiar with, obviously, where does the literature stand? So before you did your paper that we're going to talk about today, which was a systematic review of the literature, what was it that the kind of the general consensus, I guess, at that point, that from the prior work that led you to study this particular question? In other words, what's already known about the topic, and what were you trying to achieve with your systematic review?
Yeah, I suppose from reading around, I had just assumed that rear foot strike was bad, you know, that it related to injury, because a couple of studies were consistently cited or referenced, and I kind of thought, you know, I took it for granted really that, you know, rear foot strike causes this high impact loads, or, you know, like the vertical ground reaction force would be quite high with the rear foot strike, and with the relationship that has been somewhat determined between ground impact and injury, I just figured, you know what, that makes sense. And it's quite intuitive that rear foot strike might cause injury. And the more I read into it, and I suppose the more I understood the literature, I realized that there's quite a big question here, you know, that there isn't really any general consensus as to whether foot strike relates to injury or not. And looking at, say, the hierarchy of studies, I wanted to pursue something systematic, even a meta-analysis if I could have, but just the challenge with a meta-analysis in this area was that there's such a diverse range of methods and outcome measures that it just made it impossible really to pull it all together in that sense. But even from a systematic perspective, pulling it all together, it was a very enjoyable experience, and I learned a lot from it, a lot deeper understanding of foot strike, and even just the kinetics associated with foot strike and how that can be altered with gait retraining and education and injury, I suppose.
Absolutely. So again, what we're going to be talking about today is Aoife's systematic review that she was first author on, entitled Risk Factors for Injuries in Runners, a Systematic Review of Foot Strike Technique and Its Classification at Impact. And this was published recently in the Orthopedic Journal of Sports Medicine in September of 2021. And we'll have a link to this paper up on our podcast, so you're able to access it quickly. And if I remember correctly, Aoife, this is open access. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So a free download, free read for anybody who's interested in it. And we should note that one of your co-authors was Sarah Dillon, who was a former guest on our podcast as well. So it's great to see your team being so productive.
Yeah, thank you.
So maybe let's just start out a little bit. Obviously, when you're doing a systematic review, one of the key things is coming up with what criteria you're going to decide on to include in it. Because if you basically said any paper that had the word foot strike technique in it, you're probably buried in hundreds of papers, and in the end, left with way too much and no real end statement that you can contribute. So what were your criteria that you decided to work with? And then what databases were you that you ended up searching?
Yeah, so our main criteria really was that we wanted to focus on a running population. That was ultimately the aim of our PhD and the aim of this research question as well. So that was one of the main criteria. And then another criteria would be that the study would have to have assessed foot strike technique, whether that be through looking at foot strike pattern or looking at foot contact angles, ankle flexion angles, or a strike index, which we can discuss later, will be varieties of outcome measures for measuring foot strike technique. And then another criteria would be that it actually looked at running related injuries and the relationship that foot strike technique had with that. So some studies, as you said, just looked at foot strike technique, but might not have actually measured injuries. So when we were looking at the relationship, we wanted to make sure that the studies had both of those facets. And then finally, it was just that studies had, you know, a clear kind of an injury group or a control group that we could actually make comparisons between the two. And unfortunately, our language skills in DCU would be strictly English at times and maybe a bit of Irish. So that was just the final criteria, that it would be published in English and peer reviewed, just out of a strength or a quality measure there for ourselves. So then once we had the inclusion criteria, we went to a few different databases to search, I suppose, the engine of all published material. And we had a look at Medline, PubMed, Sports Discus, Scopus, and Web of Science. I think they were the main ones that we had checked out with all of those terms. And from that, I think it returned just over 2,200 articles. So my Mendeley was jam-packed and a lot of abstracts for reading, but there was a few kind of duplicate documents. So that narrowed it down a small bit for us. And as you know, some of the listeners might know with a systematic review that there is a process that you go through, and you just screen everything for legibility really until you get to the point where you are pretty confident that you have included all of the research in this area and you haven't missed anything. So I think we ended up with 18, and then ultimately 5 weren't suitable, so we had 13 to finish off, checked their reference lists, and it remained at 13 at the end. So yeah. It's probably a low number or low enough number for a systematic review, but the stringent nature of our terms, you know, that it had to look at the relationship between injury and foot strike, that probably narrowed it down somewhat.
Yeah. And we should point out as well that, you know, that the process as you describe is not you making all these decisions on your own, right? Because that would potentially introduce bias. You know, it's at least 2 individuals that are independently conducting the search, the criteria, the application of it. Yeah. And then in the end, you merge your consensus together to achieve. And yeah, so exactly. It's a very stringent process when done well. Nice job.
Yeah. And then, I suppose we have another independent that would come in if there was any disagreement or uncertainty there, that they would come in and resolve that as well. So it's definitely a team effort. Like it certainly wasn't just me doing this on the front line. Like Sarah was heavily involved, Siobhan, Enda, Kieran and Shane as well. So really nice team, very dynamic, and delighted to be working with them.
That's great. And so now when you've reduced it down to your final set of papers that you decided to include, one of the things that's nice about systematic reviews is they will grade that evidence, right? They're going to grade each paper for quality. So how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so we initially did the risk of bias, I suppose. So just to have a look at the quality of the study. And then we approached this with this grade approach, which I hadn't heard of previously, but it's a way of kind of grading studies based off their study design, the limitations, the inconsistency of the results, or the impression of the results, any kind of publication bias. And it just seemed to be a more stringent way of making sure that we were fair, in our analysis of the studies and how we were going to interpret the results of the review. So enjoyable experience. I suppose just for a good standard of writing, I would encourage everybody, that if you're reading a systematic review, that you'd look for that kind of an assessment as well, to ensure that there is that control in the study.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So out of the papers you now have and that you're going to dive deeper into to describe and understand what they did, what were the different measures of foot strike that were reported?
Yeah, so we noticed a trend in that there was kind of 2 divides or a split. So there was nominal outcome measures where it was like foot strike pattern was reported in categories. So groups were based off whether runners were rear foot strikers, mid foot strikers, or forefoot strikers. And then there was another avenue where there were more continuous measures of foot strike technique. So authors would have looked at foot contact angle, ankle flexion angle, and strike index, but wouldn't have categorized them into any distinct group. So that's the way we kind of judged the results, I suppose, because we couldn't merge the two. We had to kind of treat them almost separately, even though they were measuring the same thing, essentially. So that was our way of looking at it. And then to go deeper into that again, we kind of distinguished them between prospective studies and retrospective studies, just because, you know, your prospective study is a bit more robust in terms of determining a relationship compared to a retrospective cohort, where it's just difficult to see if it's a cause or an effect when you're kind of looking back at something in time.
Yeah, for sure. So I am curious to that effect. How many of the papers were prospective, which is just a stronger three. Design that you want. So just three, yeah.
Yeah.
Three
yeah.
out of how many again?
3 out of 13.
Yeah, 3 out of 13.
And none of them had any relationship, unfortunately. None of them, they were all continuous measures, like they were strike index and foot contact angle. So they didn't actually distinguish between rear foot, midfoot, or forefoot strike categories in their studies. So it might be nice in the future if studies kind of report both, you know, and mm-hmm. we can see if there is some way of determining, you know, like if you're defining groups, that there is kind of probably a marked difference in the impact loading between the three groups. But if you're measuring it on a continuous scale, it may not be linear. So that might be why they haven't found as many relationships as some of the groups that did look at foot strike pattern in a category as such.
Yeah. Well, and that also begs the question then, which approach is more meaningful, right? Just because it is the continuous approach that might be more sensitive to some of the nonlinear trends that are in the data. It could be a good thing. And when the flip side is, if you categorize it, and then you might, maybe you're oversimplifying it and you're washing out some effect, and then you're almost creating a difference that may not be real. So I guess you could almost make an argument either way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it was very difficult trying to decide, you know, like, how would you do it? You know, even with categories, and you're talking about degrees, if one person is plus or minus 1 degrees, arguably they could be in either category. And 1 degrees is so minimal when you look at something from a clinical perspective, or, you know, like in a real world setting, it's so hard to determine 1 degree and how much of that is actually relevant. You know, like, is it consistent for them? Does that 1 degree change every stride? And is it representative as well? So really, there's a lot of questions in this area, and questions that I don't even have the answer to.
Well, and it goes back to your opening point, which is like, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, right? Yeah, and the more questions you have. And, you know, the other issue I think that comes up with some of the categorical approaches is, you know, we all think we know what a rear foot strike is or what a midfoot strike is, but then when you actually try to operationally define it based on some sort of quantitative measure, there's a lot of inconsistency even in the literature as to how do they define a midfoot strike pattern? How do they define a forefoot, you know, and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is definitely difficult. And sometimes, you know, like, you think back and it's just like, visually, you know, is the rear foot hitting first? You know, it could be that simple, but there's always, when you look back at like slow motion videos, there is those that are on the brink of maybe one or two different patterns. And, you know, even I'm sure Irene Davis has kind of, I suppose, worked on classifying it in certain degree categories, and then Kavanagh has also defined it in, you know, certain degree categories. So it's just, I don't know the real way to do it or the best way to do it, but
exactly.
It's just difficult. Yeah
And then you've got the other issue of, some individuals have different foot strikes from right side versus left side. And even within a run, it's not as if every time you see the same foot strike. Some people hover right in that point, like you said, where they, one foot strike might be more of a midfoot, one might be more of a rear foot. And it's hard to then glump them into one category.
Yeah. And what we did find across the studies, I think the majority of the studies had less than 5 foot strikes analyzed for their analysis. So it's very difficult to know how much credence you can have in that, you know, in itself. But the difficulty of getting more data, as you said, you know, IMUs are becoming more prevalent, and I think that's a really good thing. But it is, it is difficult in a laboratory perspective to get more data than 5 foot strikes or 10 foot strikes, and the time that it takes to process those, and is it representative, or, you know, like, should you be getting 100s? And you're asking somebody to trace across a force plate 100 times and they might miss it 50 times, so you have to do another 50 more. And the challenges of the gold standard approach are difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There are some hurdles to overcome for sure. Yeah. So 3 out of the 13 studies were prospective, none of which showed a relationship to injury risk. That means then 10 of the 13 were retrospective in design. What were their findings? So what were those studies and their relationship toward injury?
Yeah, so I suppose 3 studies found that there was a relationship between rear foot strike and either general kind of overuse running related injuries or hamstring injuries. And then 2 studies found somewhat the opposite, where there was a relationship between midfoot strike and forefoot strike with Achilles tendon injuries and posterior shank injuries. And then 1 study found that a lower contact angle was related to being uninjured, which was kind of counterintuitive. So all these studies were saying, you know, like, if you hit the ground with a large contact angle, you're likely to be injured as such. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but Dinjanin found that, you know, this lower angle was almost related to injury, but those candidates or those participants had a knee injury in the past. So the authors kind of hypothesized that it's probably hard to determine if that low contact angle was as a result of a change. So, you know, they were unable to manage the impact loads before they got the injury, and then they kind of had to do something to go back running. So they probably went more towards a midfoot or a forefoot strike, so that kind of knee extension or those patellofemoral forces would have reduced. And then as a result, maybe they've adapted this midfoot or forefoot strike, even though that they had a history of injury.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So given all of that and what you've said, now let's go back to what you said in the beginning about grading the science that was involved with it. How did these 13 studies grade out in terms of quality?
So most of them had a low risk of bias. 2 of them had a moderate risk of bias, though. You know, like, that one study used a self-report survey. So high numbers, but self-report isn't as accurate or reliable as what we would want it to be. And then I suppose just some of it, with the retrospective nature of it, and some of them had very low numbers, then your credence in the results taints a small bit. So when we did all of the analysis and we looked at the grading analysis as well, it just turned out to be very low evidence in the end, that there wasn't much to be said for changing it, or there wasn't much evidence to say that, you know, a rear foot strike does cause injury.
Yeah. So sorry. Yeah, exactly, right? It's like, whoops, sorry, buddy. So what do we... How do we get to the point to share that information with others who are so confident that this is an established fact, when the reality is, again, your quality synthesis of the literature shows that it's murky, very murky at best. And that murkiness is based on low quality data.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I think ultimately the best way to solve that would be higher quality studies, you know, like prospective trials, even randomized control trials, if there is the funding and the appetite there. But ultimately, you know, like, one other thing that we pulled out was, you know, when you look at running related injuries as an outcome measure, and you have either they're injured or they're uninjured, and that's, you know, your binomial approach, it's good, but it doesn't tell you a whole lot about, you know, the impact of the variable on the injury. So for example, if we were to look at, you know, knee injuries specifically or Achilles injuries specifically, maybe we would start to find relationships then. You know, maybe the rear foot strike definitely causes more loading on your anterior, your knee structure, whereas your forefoot strike would cause more loading on your kind of posterior chain, or especially the Achilles and calf. And that has been well established, and that is relatively well known. So I figure, you know, like if prospective studies can have an analysis of injuries by location, maybe, but even more specifically or deeper, again, looking at specific pathologies, you know, so that the clinician can get an idea of how important this might be, you know, like if we find that rear foot strike running relates to tibial stress fractures, but not to medial tibial stress syndrome, is it worth changing or is it not? And you have to look at the severity of the injury and the impact that that has on the runner as well. And equally with patellofemoral pain syndrome, that can nag on for months and months and be a hindrance to the runner. And, you know, if there is a relationship there, should we be looking at changing it or changing something about the impact loading that the runner is tolerating, and can they alter that to maybe improve and hopefully become injury free, or at least have a clearer go at a marathon or a half marathon without breaking down at a pivotal time of loading.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, this is all in the context of that. We're not suggesting that a gait retraining, it would be the be all end all in terms of care. There's obviously the foundation of tissue quality, tissue capacity has to be established up front, and smart training, right? I mean, there's those that are the really the foundation of it. Then we're talking about, you know, making some tweaks or adjustments to this. Yeah. You know, I think you raise a good point about it. You know, obviously prospective studies would be fantastic. Funding, as you brought up, you know, that's got to be there because those are expensive to do. And then obviously, if you start doing like subgroup analysis into individual injuries or by location, now your numbers just explode in order to do that in a prospective way, which drives up your funding costs even higher. So it's a tough one. It's how do you get that balance and to make it a feasible study to conduct and yet still give you that the meaningful data that you need in the end to answer the question.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident at this stage of my PhD journey that there's no one factor really that relates to injury, bar maybe previous injury.
Exactly.
It seems that, you know, you could spend all of your time looking at, say, for example, foot strike and not look at anything else. But in theory, you know, training load is huge, and your approach to training load, your experience, your tolerance and your threshold or your baseline strength and conditioning, like there's so many other factors that come in there and have quite a compounding effect on ultimately injury. So looking at one thing in isolation is probably not going to get us too far either.
Yeah, exactly. So let's chat a little bit about your future work. You guys are, you're obviously in the middle of it right now with the PhD.
Yeah.
And part of a very productive group. Where are you heading? Where's this going?
Yeah, so I suppose Sarah and I are coming to the end of our PhD journey. So we're probably in our final year at the minute. And right now we are processing all of our kinematic data. So ultimately, the aim of our PhD was to conduct an 18-month prospective trial of running-related injuries, and we took into account, you know, your clinical measures of strength, mobility, foot posture that you spoke about with Sarah previously.
Yep.
And I had a look at, you know, some training load variables, and we also used IMUs to track some impact acceleration, and then we had our 3D motion analysis as well. So at the minute, we're pulling out all of that 3D data. We have all the impact acceleration data, so we're pretty close to kind of combining everything and going to be running some regression analysis and try to see, you know, are there any relationships or can injury be predicted, or are we no further along the line, and, you know, we can hopefully maybe point some people in the right direction going forward or add some little pieces to it that would definitely help in our understanding of it. But we're pretty close now to beginning our statistical analysis of kinematics and kinetics, so hopefully in the coming months we'll get writing up and you'll start to see some more findings from this part of Europe.
Oh, that's fantastic. And of course, we're going to invite you guys back on because we have to, you know, when you plant that seed on with the data set that you guys have, we have to hear the story. Yeah. We have to hear the conclusion.
Right? We'll do a team duo.
There you go. So I am curious, when you're all finished with your PhD, are you going to continue in the running research realm, or are you going to shift gears, or have you decided, you know what, this running thing is just not what it's cracked up to be?
I do think I have a fascination with the mindset of a runner, and this kind of query of a niggle, or what a niggle is, you know, like this, the definition of injury. It has been well defined. There's been consensus definitions that are pretty robust. But then when you talk to runners and you see that, you know, there's this, I'm not injured, you know, it's a defiance, you know, that don't count me as injured because I just have this niggle, and, you know, like, it's I can keep running, I can keep training, but, you know, how to capture that and make sure that we are capturing it. So that's probably an avenue that I want to explore more. And then other aspects, you know, personal interest would be using IMUs in, you know, some real-time game situations, you know, with team sports, you know, maybe concussion detection and things like that would be something that I'm interested in. But there's a lot of options, and I probably don't have enough time to do everything. But I think I will persist with the running related injury research, just because I enjoy it, and there's so much to uncover in that sphere, I think.
Yeah, fantastic. We need more minds like yours in this space, so we'd love to keep you in there.
Thank you.
Aoife, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate taking the time. I know you're busy right now with all the teams you're working with. So thank you for making the time.
No, thank you very much for having me. And it's a pleasure to meet you. And I'm reading your research all the time and trying to keep up with that as well. So thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Jeremy Stoker, we'd like to thank you for tuning in. And as a reminder, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Remember to check for updates on the 2022 Mountainland Running Summit, September 29th through October 1st at summit.mlrehab.com. As always, you can find more information on all the running medicine resources offered by Mountainland Physical Therapy at mlrehab.com/run. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Exercises that are safe and appropriate for some people may not be for you. No treatment program should be undertaken without first consulting your physical therapist or physician. The contents of this podcast is protected under United States copyright laws and may not be reproduced, redistributed, transmitted, displayed, published, or broadcast without prior written permission of Mountainland Physical Therapy.